Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Keeping your sports day moving as you sit still in traffic. This is the 3HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery with Brent Doherty, Mickey Ryan, and Don Davenport.
Welcome in Friday, 3HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Man, let's get this thing rolling. 2 o'clock into Music City. Don Davenport with the day off. Never fear, though. We have our usual Friday guest, Mark Mariani, will join us for a couple of hours, 3 to 5. And in the 2 o'clock hour, he is officially off the banned list. You heard him on the Wake Up Zone. Now he joins us, Joe Rexroad of The Athletic, our guest for this entire hour. Great to have you, man.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, guys. It's good to be in the building and not be banned.
I mean, there's kind of a story that goes along with that, but, you know, that's for a different day.
Your former employer, you've been a columnist for a long time in this market with Tennessean newspaper, and there was a communication from them that, anyway, you were not allowed to come on this station, and now you can.
And I blame it all on Kaharsky. So, you know, I've been waiting years to be able to come on this station, rip Kaharsky.
Well, you're actually sitting
into it.
You're actually sitting in his chair.
I am.
So he's got a pile of toys over there that you can choose to utilize or not. That's up to you. But good to see you, man. And for those that don't know, Joe Rexroad, 3 years with the Tennessean as a columnist, and now making the transition to The Athletic, and that happened this week.
Monday was day one. And it happened very fast, really in the last few weeks. So, yeah, about 3 years and 3 months went by really quickly. Said it every chance I've gotten. I mean, loved my job. Loved the Tennessean. And, you know, The Athletic is I'm excited about the opportunity. I think it's a great place. I've been a happy subscriber for a while. And it's cool to link up with my old Tennessean teammates, Adam Vingan and John Glennon.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, and you're a columnist, and I'm sure there are some people, okay, why did they call him a columnist? The columnist is the guy, how do I put this, that you don't like a lot of the time? Is that fair? Can I say it that way?
That's fair.
If you read papers or publications, the columnist is the guy that you usually don't like.
Well, the reporter's, the reporter's telling you the story, and the columnist is giving
an opinion.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So, like Taylor Lewan, maybe, you know, not loving the columnist, you know, lately. I mean, but to me, you know, like to me, that's where, and there's a lot of different things that go into it, and sometimes it is just telling a great story. But
right.
But yeah, when something like that happens, I think it's a responsibility to, you know, say what you really think about it, and I think he really blew that. So. Just for an example.
Yes. Well, there you go. Right off the top, columnist. Real opinions from Joe Rexroad.
What was your take on Nashville when you moved here? Like, coming in, you're thinking about this opportunity, and you've got visions of Nashville in your head, and then you move here, and the experience was what?
Well, first of all, you know, my sister has lived in Franklin for a long time.
Okay.
So we had a run there where it was almost like mini family reunions around July 4th every summer. So we love Nashville from that. And, you know, touring around, doing the touristy stuff. It's funny because I, you know, with no reason to think it would ever happen, I remember my wife and I, you know, several years ago, and trying to say, man, if something ever opened up here, you know, it would be pretty cool. And then it did happen. So, you know, I had kind of an idea, and I did wonder about Nashville, you know, as a sports town. I wondered about Nashville as a hockey town, frankly. Yeah. I mean, I did, you know, I remember, you know, the Predators and the Red Wings would have some great battles, but it's like, do they really love hockey down there? And it's funny because my first day on the job at the Tennessean, you know, you go through all the HR stuff and everything. And then I was actually dressed nicely that day, you know, and they're like, yeah, you know, go write a column off the Predators. It was like game six against the Ducks in 2016. So that, you know, my first experience, and I know it's the playoffs, but still, like, you know, I walked out of there like, whoa, man, this is some serious stuff.
And that's jumping straight into the fast lane there.
Yeah. So along with like, what did I just write? And please, I hope no one reads it. Which, by the way, got in the paper the next day.
Yeah, you know, I remember. You
know, going back then. But also just that was my first glimpse of the, you know, the passion for the Predators and also what that building is. And, of course, it only grew. I mean, a year later, we're all in the midst of that run and all that happened with that. But
yeah, good so timing was, on your part yeah. to get in on the front end of that little story.
Exactly. And also, I came in, I had heard a lot from people, especially people I know cover the NFL, about Titans ownership, about as bad as it gets. Mm-hmm. There's apathy. They don't care. They don't invest. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's ugly. Okay. And so that was my preconceived notion. Mm-hmm. Now that I think I took the job right around the time they were transitioning to Amy Adams Strong.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's funny because I had that preconceived notion and then I'm looking at her and John Robinson and all of a sudden, I'm like, boy, I feel like they've done some stuff here. Like, I think like maybe they're doing some things that might be good.
Maybe I got bad intel on this.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think obviously they need to make some changes, but they made good ones. So those were the, you know, you think of those two teams.
Yeah.
I also, you know, then you got the college teams and it's been, I think, kind of what I thought, you know, of, I think Vanderbilt and Tennessee, like the huge Tennessee fan base.
And tell people what market you were in before you came here, just for comparison.
Yeah, so I covered Michigan State as a beat writer for a long time. I worked at the Detroit Free Press before I came here. And I worked at the Detroit Free Press, but I lived, you know, in Lansing, mm-hmm. covering Michigan State. So, it's obviously different. I mean, up there, like the Detroit Lions, I mean, it's a joke of a franchise. But if the Detroit Lions let out a peep of competence at any point, the entire state turns on its ear. It's just how it is. And it's, I mean, that's when you have generational fandom and you've got, I mean, unfortunately, I was indoctrinated into, I mean, I finally got it out of my blood at some point because you have to. Right. You want to be sane as a sports fan.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the generational fandom. And it's interesting here seeing now you've got people who do remember going to Titans games as kids. You know, it's so early still in the process of getting it to where some of these other NFL towns are. But it's very different for sure. But that's the thing, you know, hockey town, Detroit, and, oh, you know, what do they know about hockey? And I from day one, so impressed with this place as a hockey place.
Isn't it amazing? You know, people from other hockey towns, like you're saying, like Detroit, they've got a view of what hockey life is like here, and it's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, everybody wants to, you know, everybody still wants to, and hey, maybe I know early on it was like Pete and Terry were doing the you know, like the hockey 101 stuff or whatever. You know, everybody still wants to think, oh, they don't even know what like offsides is or whatever. Right. It's like, okay, yeah, we're past that. We're well past that.
HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Joe Rexroad in studio for this hour, a columnist with The Athletic. Apparently, I was a little lazy saying athletic earlier, and someone thought I said a dirty word at the beginning before athletic. Didn't mean to.
That would be a completely different website.
Been a long week. Yes, don't go to that website. It's been a long week. Training camp actually over, Joe. I'm fine with that. I'm good with it. I'm ready for whatever's next.
Thinking like you at every session.
I'm baked in the sun, and you know, I've seen what I needed to see.
Yeah, me too. I've been impressed with your long sleeve hoodies. I mean, you're like Mariota out there. I'm like, sweat it out, man.
Yeah, you know?
But maybe that's smart because I'm throwing block on my arms, and you don't have to worry about that.
Well, I throw it everywhere else. None of me has been exposed to direct sunlight since 2003 or something like that.
What's your biggest takeaway, Joe Rexroad, from training camp thus far?
That's a good question. You'd think that I'd have something ready for that, but that's a good question.
It's a wide-ranging question. The defense, as good as you thought coming into year two with the piece system, we could start there.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the defense, I guess one takeaway is I think Harold Landry looks like he is backing, and you can't back it up until you get into games, but
right.
He looks like he's been talking, you know? I mean, because he's talked a lot in the offseason about, you know, you can't be, you know, one-trick pony. You got to have a change up and a curve, too, and all that stuff. And I know that he's one of those guys, you know, Mike Vrabel, you can kind of tell with Vrabel, he's not going to directly say, this guy's, you know, doing great. This guy, you know, he
won't do it.
But you can tell when he mentions guys that he's maybe extremely happy with this guy. And with Landry, I think he was in the building the entire offseason, and he looks it too. So I feel like, and I think he's so important. And I love the back seven.
And Landry said he was in there every day with Daquan Jones, that they were workout partners.
That they're friends now. What an odd couple. Friends. And
there's your column, is the likely, unlikely friendship forged between those two.
That's a good idea.
But that's key, right, for this team this year. That's key for Harold Landry to be that guy, right? Because Dean Pease was able to get pressure last year, but he had to dial it all up himself. Schematically, and you know, he needs Harold Landry to be that guy off the edge that needs to be game planned.
Absolutely. And you know, look, I think someday we're going to see Jarrell Casey and Jeffrey Simmons together, and that could be,
oh my goodness,
a problem for opposing offenses. But I don't know when we're going to see it, and that to me is my question. Do they have enough help for him up front? We saw what happened when he wasn't there against the Colts, and I mean, the Colts just ran the ball wherever they wanted to all night. I mean, so that's what I've been looking at, you know. Daquan, Austin Johnson, I think clearly he's got to take a step. He's got to pick it up.
Maybe two.
Yeah. And like Brent Urban, I you can see how he can help this team. If they're okay there, and as you said, Brent, you know, Dean Pease dials up blitzes. He's going to do that. He's known for that. He'll get those DBs coming from every angle. But sometimes you've got to be able to just play straight up and play coverage and still affect a quarterback. And if they can, I think this could be certainly a top 10 defense, maybe better than that. And I love, like, when you look at, we haven't seen all the weapons yet together, I don't think. No. I don't think we've seen them all at once.
They started practice, and then A.J. Brown slipped and fell and immediately left, and then it was downhill from there.
So he comes back this week, and by the way, you can see this week, that guy could help.
Coaches talk about, I noticed him Saturday, or I noticed him in the game. Like, A.J. Brown yesterday, you couldn't help but notice that guy.
Yes, and that play in the back of the end zone, he didn't get his second foot down, but it's like, oh, wow.
That was a freak catch, yes.
Who can make that play? Yeah. So he comes back, Adam Humphreys, I think it's a minor thing, like a cut on his leg, but he's out. But even yesterday with Brown out there and then Corey Davis back out there and Delanie Walker out there, I mean that's a takeaway for sure. It's not that we didn't know that they had done these things to improve the team, but when you see all those guys, it's like, man, Mariota has, I think, easily his best arsenal. And as long as, if the offensive line, once it's finally all complete, is, you know, as good as they hope, I think this offense could be very surprising.
This Joe Rexroad, our guest with The Athletic, this whole thing about this made-up quarterback controversy, those of us who are here every day, and basically this, none of us is saying anything definitive certainly beyond this season or whatever. But I think to a man, everyone in the press and a woman, including Teresa and the other ladies who are out there covering the Titans, Marcus Mariota is the starter of this team. He's going to start week one against Cleveland, unless he, you know, kills someone or jumps off a building or something like that. He's the starter.
Marcus Mariota murder someone would be the most unlikely story in the history of stories.
See, and that's not going to happen. So that's why I've used that as an example.
He'd probably be number two. He'd probably be QB2 after that.
Yeah. Maybe at that point he gets demoted. But, you know, Tannehill played really well against the twos. But if you go back and look historically at his stats, and it's funny, you can spin a message any way you want to spin it. Most of Mariota's stats per throw, yards per attempt, interception percentage, touchdown percentage, most of those numbers career-wise are better than Tannehill. But if you just say, let's have a throwing contest, I think Tannehill's going to win that a whole lot more than Marcus ever would.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with this is, I think it's like two different discussions. I think that Tannehill and Mariota are comparable.
Yes.
And you can make an argument either way. Yeah. And I won't be surprised in the least if at some point this season there's a lot of talk here and elsewhere about, maybe they should go with Tannehill. Okay. Yeah. I think that's certainly possible. It's possible that at some point they're in a game and Mariota is just having a terrible day. And it's like, for the first time in Mariota's career, they've actually got an option. They might be like, maybe we should do this. That's all fine. It's just the other discussion, which makes no sense at all, is the idea that the first snap in Cleveland would go to Tannehill. That's not happening.
It's not happening. And I'm not saying that. I'm kind of with you. I think there is certainly a possibility at some point this season that if Mariota is not playing well, that he finds the sideline. Because I think this coaching staff, every coaching staff really, but this one, Mike Vrabel and these guys and John Robinson – I think they feel like they have a good enough team at every other position. And if they feel like quarterback is holding them back, they'll make a move. I don't think that, you know, that I really believe that they'll do that if they feel like that, you know, getting the best guy on the field is Tannehill. Not for Cleveland, but at some point this season, I could see that happening.
Absolutely. And so, this thing kind of came out of, you know, and again, it's, you know, reporters say things here and there. And if someone's reporting, a source said, you know, Tannehill, is a strong candidate to start week one or whatever. That's one thing. This was sort of like the tone. So it's a conversation. But then the problem is then other like ESPN people are jumping in like, oh no, I can totally. I'm like, I want to know like how much Titans football you've thought of in the off season, how much you watch, you know, because it's not logical. I mean, unless Mike Vrabel is like pulling a big switcheroo and he's just like, you know, reversing the reps. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Hey, maybe tomorrow Tannehill comes out there, plays a series, Mariota gets the whole second half, and we're like, okay, well, then it's there you go. That's your answer. But no, I mean, Mariota, what is it, $20.9 million this year he's making? Yeah, you're going to give that guy a chance to play.
So where are you long-term with him? Because I'm exceptionally concerned about him moving forward. I've been on this for a couple of years. I don't know where you are with it, but – Mariota's like the nicest guy you will ever find. You cannot question his competitiveness. You cannot question his toughness. But the last couple of years, what was it? 24 touchdowns, 23 interceptions. I mean, that's just not good enough. If I'm looking to go 5 years down the road and pay a ton of money, I don't know moving forward, you know, that he's that guy. Where are you with him? Big picture.
I've definitely changed. We talked about me coming here 3 years ago. That was 2016. That was his best year. And there were times that year when I was like, this guy's going to be like elite. This guy's going to be special. And there, look, you still see it. I mean, last year against New England, last year against Dallas, the Philly comeback. I mean, he has these moments. I mean, last year, I have no idea what the numbers were. Like, when they won that game at Jacksonville, I was like, the guy could throw it 10 yards, but here he makes one key third down throw. Here he makes one scramble. Yep. He's a winner, right? Yeah. So, like, that counts and that matters. But I agree with you, Brent. I mean, you've got to produce at a certain level in this league, and if you don't over time, you know, I don't think you're going to win enough. So I would still say – I'm on the if you had a dividing line, you know, you're pro or you know whatever team Mariota or again, you know, I'm certainly right around the middle. I'd probably still be on the side of I still think he can do it.
I agree.
But yeah,
because you're right, he does show moments. But it's that buzzword over there that we've been hearing all offseason. It's consistency. You know, he's got to find that. And so what is he? Is he the top of his range? Is he the bottom of his range? Because that's a pretty big divide.
It is. And, you know, he's still, I don't think he's ever going to be the point. I mean, he's always going to sometimes miss throws that are like an NFL quarterback has to make that throw. Now, then he'll make a throw that you're like, oh, I don't know how many guys even try it. Like, you know, especially before last year in the red zone, that was always the thing with him is like, man, how did he see that? How did he sneak that in there? He's making like no look passes for touchdowns. But no, you're right. I mean, and of course, we haven't even touched on, I think, the biggest concern, and that's just, is the guy going to stay in one piece? I mean, if you told me that he's going to get past that and that he's going to be able to have full seasons on the field and still be able to use his athleticism, but use it. I mean, I think he's usually smart, but still he gets banged up. And sometimes it's on these hits that look so harmless. Yeah. If you told me that he's getting past that, I'm going – up a few notches in belief that he's going to get it done, but I still think that's the biggest question.
And if you look at who's a free agent next year, it's Mariota and Tannehill and Jameis Winston and Teddy Bridgewater. Then if you look at the draft, it's Tua, and he's going to go lickety-split. Well, Herbert, Jake Fromm. And if they win 9 or 10 games over there, regardless of what happens with the quarterback situation, you're not getting any of those top quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean,
should give up draft capital.
Yeah.
Right, to move up or – well, you're right. And, I mean, Tannehill to me – along with being finally a backup you need for a guy like Mariota who does get hurt. I think Tannehill's also a guy that if things don't go well with Mariota and, you know, Tannehill likes it here, I think that could be your bridge guy. That could be your, you know, you're signing for a year or two and now, you know, you're the guy. You know, we're going to draft a guy. You're going to bring him along. And in the meantime, you know, prove what you can do as a starter again. It's not like, I mean, Tannehill's, you know, he's got a track record. So I think it goes so many different ways. I don't think it'll go the franchise tag way. I just don't think it will. I think it's going to be one or the other with Mariota.
Okay.
But I think there's this huge middle ground season like the last few where pretty good, maybe the number's a little better, missed a couple games. What do you do?
If he wasn't the nicest guy in the world, how many people in this market do you think would be rooting for him based on what's happened the last couple of years? If he wasn't the nicest guy in the world.
I think that's a great point. Absolutely. No, I mean, it would be, I think it'd be a different tone. I think it would be. But you know, it's the nice guy thing, but it's also what you hear internally and what you can tell is that like they all, I know he's not vocal enough. He's not Tom Brady. Yeah. He's not, but they love him. They genuinely believe in him because he does work his butt off and he does everything right. So it's not just like he's nice. It's also because, man, he's out there doing everything he can do. So they believe in him, want to believe in him, but at some point it's performance.
We're giving away Tennessee and Vanderbilt football season tickets. When? Where? Join 104.5 The Zone on Thursday night, August 29th for our college football kickoff party at Corner Pub downtown on Fifth Avenue. We were just there yesterday. It is real and it is spectacular. Get the cheese beans. I promise you'll be excited that you did. Come watch all the football. The Thursday night football games will all be on, and the Titans preseason finale on a giant 50-foot LED TV wall. And then they also have over 20 75-inch TVs as well. You must be present to win the season ticket. So join us at Corner Pub downtown on Fifth Avenue Thursday, August 29th. Going to be awesome.
Joe Rexford from The Athletic with us in studio until 3 o'clock. Mark Mariani from 3 until 5, former Titans wide receiver, VLove87 on Twitter. He's actually at still VLove87 on Twitter. If you drank every time, at Brent Doherty said he was concerned about Mariota on 3HL, and there's a GIF of a guy like crawling across the ground, and I retweeted, wrote, you'd be dead, because I am concerned about Marcus Mariota moving forward. And I'm like you. I'm kind of in the middle. Like, he has shown that he can do it. But can you do it week in and week out? That's the question for him. And listen, you're a starting NFL quarterback, and you throw 11 touchdown passes? That's not good enough, man. And no. The year before was 13. That's not good enough. He's got to find that next level, and I don't know if he can.
No, I agree. I do. When you look at, you know, comparing year to year to year, I do think back to 2016, I thought the Titans had one of the top, you know, what, three or four offensive lines in the NFL.
They did.
So, they had a great running game. DeMarco Murray was the best back in the league first half of the year, but for sure before he got hurt. And Derrick Henry is a rookie. And that, you know, the play-action game was so lethal for them. I mean, he's throwing that year to Delanie Walker, but he's throwing to Kendall Wright and Rishard Matthews and a rookie Tajay Sharp. And that's where, like, this year I feel like, look, I mean, I think John Robinson's done a good job of putting – better pieces around him. I did not realize how good Adam Humphries is until I saw him day after day in practice. And like Logan Ryan's like life quest right now is like, you know, covering him. It's like, man, that guy just made me look silly. And Logan Ryan's a really good player. You know, you think about those guys, you know, Humphries and Walker. Corey Davis, I think, is going to take another step. Now you have A.J. Brown. Sharp's still around. Taywan Taylor. I mean, with Derrick Henry, if he's Derrick Henry of 1 month of his career and not the rest, you know, I mean, there's really no excuse. There can't possibly be an excuse. You've got to be able to. Sometimes it's just like, man, just get the ball in the hands of your playmakers. You know, I just feel like sometimes he still looks jittery. I know it's the preseason, but even with these practices with the Patriots at times, and he outperformed Tannehill, by the way, in case we want to get into that, but at times it's like, settle your feet and just make a simple throw. And sometimes he just seems like he's just off kilter and then sailing a pass.
Yeah, let it rip. Deliver the ball on time.
But again, like, we can find
you
games.
You can get technical, but, I mean, ultimately, just deliver the ball.
Yeah. You can find individual games where, even the loss, what was it, the loss at Houston last year, what was it, like 22 of 23? I mean, you know, it didn't matter, but – you know, it's like, to your point, Brent, man, consistency is, I mean, it's the most difficult thing to attain, I think, in pro sports, and he certainly hasn't done it.
It's interesting, if you look league-wide, I was thinking about this morning. I was just kind of sitting there making some notes. You know, kids are back in school, and you have a quiet house, and you can think for a minute. And I thought, you know, we're watching Tom Brady, and people say, well, he does this, and he does it. There's only literally one Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know, he's in, like, that five all-time, if you want to pick – you know, Otto Graham from the 50s and Bart Starr from the 60s and, you know, pick who you want from the 70s. If it's Bradshaw or Stabler, take one of those guys. you know, he's that guy for, but literally he's been the guy for two decades now. So you can't compare that. So I thought, let's just say it's a nice easy number. Let's say there are 10 elite quarterbacks in the league, 10. And that's probably too much, but 10's an easy number to work with. Well, that leaves 16 more. Then everybody's got a backup, so that's, you know, 32 more. Then some teams have a third guy, and that's probably half the teams. So I did the math, and it was 70, 80 quarterbacks in the league. So for about 10 teams, you got Phillip Rivers, you got Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, they're going to do what they're – everybody else, you just got to figure out, how do we make our guy look the best he can look? How do we maximize his strengths and minimize his weaknesses? And the thing I like about Arthur Smith is, at least, they kind of built some of that building around Arthur Smith. He's been there long enough. Right. He's watched every throw Marcus has ever made in real time, as well as on film, 10 different times, yep, as part of what he was doing and working with the tight ends. So if anybody could do it and they could have this open, hey, man, I don't like this. Okay, I like this. It just seems like this is not only is the personnel better, the guy working with him to me is the best possible option at this point in his career.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, the continuity, which of course he hasn't had a lot of in that way. So, yeah, I mean, it's all there. The offensive line, I think, is going to be a lot better once it's all put together. But, you know, you got challenges there too. I mean, there have been a lot of injuries in camp. You know, Nate Davis, I thought, might be, you know, pushing for a starting job.
Totally.
And maybe at some point he will. And then, of course, you know, with Lawan, I mean, hey, it's great if you're the Titans to have Dennis Kelly. I do think that eventually that's going to be – it should be the – and I think Jack Conklin has looked good out there.
Yeah.
I think it'll be the best offensive line that he's had since 2016. So, yeah, and I think Arthur Smith, you know, we don't know as a play caller in real games, that's still a separate thing. You can be a great coach. Everybody can love you, and the players can relate to you and all that stuff, and you still – like, that's a different thing that we just don't know until he gets into it.
Yeah.
But, man, everything I've seen from that guy, awfully impressive. And I think we can see – I think it's easy to see how he survives every single coaching change here.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe Rexroad, our guest from The Athletic, Derrick Henry not being out there. This is another thing we discussed yesterday, is Marcus has never had this full complement of weapons. And Dawn Davenport is not here today. She said, you know, let's say Corey takes a breather. Let's say AJ's got to step out for a minute. You know, maybe Tajay doesn't get this particular rep. With any team, as you go down the depth chart, it's going to be less effective. But to me, the thing that is of the utmost importance for this team offensively is to have every one of those A1 guys available. Because I don't know how great the depth is. I just don't know, especially at receiver. You know, if Corey and AJ are the guys and Adam Humphries and Delanie Walker and then Derrick Henry's behind Mariota, I feel great. If you start chipping off and here's Darius Jennings and here's Khalif Raymond, I love those guys and what they bring to the table, but the drop-off seems fairly noticeable.
Khalif Raymond's leading the league in receptions this year. I don't know what you're talking about.
He's been kind of quiet these last couple of days.
He has, actually, right? Yeah. I mean, it's funny
how
that
works.
And I
love the guy. I interviewed him. I'm rooting for him.
He's a great story.
But he's been really quiet the last couple of days.
Yeah. And Taywan Taylor's kind of responded, which
has
been good to see.
Yeah.
No, I agree. That position, because like Deion Lewis, I mean, it is funny to think back to midseason, though, or even actually past midseason. Think back to Dallas last year when it was like, okay. Or, you know, London and Dallas, it's like, okay, we know who the top back is. It is Deion Lewis. They're going to ride Deion Lewis, and Henry's, you know, goal line guy and fourth quarter guy. They use him as a fourth quarter guy against New England after Flewellen got a series instead of him, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you think about then how dramatically that has changed. And, yeah, it's so different, Deion Lewis. And I still think they'll use him as a weapon, and it's good to have him, but it's just there's a big gap now. One guy I've been really impressed with during camp, I think Jeremy McNichols is a really nice player and a well-rounded player who can do a lot of things. That's going to be a really interesting thing because I almost think, you know, let's say, and I don't think Henry's fine. I think right now they're just being cautious. But, you know, I almost feel like a McNichols, you know, is – you know, he's not like Derrick Henry, but like almost a better replacement for him as a primary back with Deion Lewis in his same role, possibly, if it gets they don't need it to get to that.
I think that's the third guy, right? I mean, if Flewellen is gone, injury-wise.
And we haven't seen Flew practice in a while, so I'm not feeling great about the flu storyline right now.
Well, he's interesting too because they've kind of transitioned him. You know, they're you know, fullback H-back with him. So that
plans for him.
Yep. Yeah, that could impact the tight end situation too. Yeah. You know,
well,
and like a guy like Ryan Hewitt is another guy.
Has played fullback in the league, yep, while playing tight end. And I noticed yesterday against the Patriots, I saw Firkser go back there. So if Firkser can do it, then you maybe don't have to keep another guy because you're like, Firkser, you're also the tight end, dude.
Well, I mean, yeah. They've tried that before and really didn't take, but yeah, maybe.
I mean, they're trying with Firkser. There's some things you can't change about him, you know?
I mean, good.
Have you been surprised? He's actually dropped a few this camp. He didn't drop anything last year in training camp. He was 19 of 20 targets. It's all well documented. He's dropped a few this camp. He's human.
I'd advise him to not anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the way this roster's shaping up, I would advise him to not because he's got to be great in that area.
Yeah, at the thing that he does, which is catching passes. How closely do you think Derrick Henry and his camp are watching Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott and all these running back negotiations? Because he's up after this year.
Yeah, closely, and probably not, you know, feeling great about it. I mean, it's tough because I think at that position to command, you've got to be absolutely.
You have to be Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, you have to be. I mean, and look, you have to be what he was for a month because they were built around him for that month, and they couldn't do without him. But is that how they're going to feel long term to give him that kind of a deal? I don't know. I think he would have to be spectacular this season, and if he's not, I don't know about him here.
That is an intriguing thing that we'll all be watching. Just gut feeling, I think he will be that guy this year, and I think they will pound the rock, and I think that will open up that RPO game and those play action passes for Marcus, which is what he does best. And if he can stay injury free, I feel like he can have a good year despite all of the concerns that I have about him. But we'll have to wait and see.
If that happens, I think that's a really good team.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. I think we know the defense. You can count on that to a certain level. If that happens and Derrick Henry is December Derrick Henry and everything else that comes from that happens.
And Corey Davis is training camp Corey Davis.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, they're going to win a lot of games this year. You know, I mean, I really think this team is a 9-7. Like you feel good about 8-8, 9-7, but it's not like you have to have dramatic, crazy stuff happen for it to be more like 11 win kind of team. Yeah. Maybe you always give that training camp optimism. You know, you're around a team a lot. You're like, oh, these guys are unbelievable.
That's definitely true.
Guys are great. NHL powered by the Tennessee Lottery. One more segment with Joe Rex Road. Been in this market now for over 3 years, writing about the Preds and the Titans, college football, you name it. He does a little bit of everything. Let's talk a little bit of Preds in this last segment. It's an interesting offseason. Because essentially, one guy left and one guy came. Everything else is just kind of window dressing, you know. I mean, sure, Rocco got some arbitration and all, but Duchesne comes and Subban goes.
Yeah, that's the big thing, and you know, not all at once. So you had that little, you know, that little time in between. We were like, man, you better sign Duchesne if you're going to trade Subban away for some picks and a couple players. But he got his guy, so we're going to see now. I mean, it's been like. There's one thing since I've been here from day one, too, pretty much, is the Matt Duchesne infatuation with Rebels fans, right?
Yeah.
So here he is.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, I thought when the season ended, guys, that every effort should be made to move Kyle Turris. It's just not working out here.
I just don't know that you can.
No.
You could.
I don't.
With
that contract. Yeah. I think we're seeing you can't.
Yeah.
And so... He's a big – I think the two guys who really are key, obviously Duchesne, but Kyle Turris, Mikhail Granlund, who was, I think, quite unimpressive in his short sample size in his time here. I think that's not him. I think there's a – I'd be surprised if he's not more what he's been his whole career.
I love that point,
But Turris, I mean, really Turris had a fantastic first few weeks, after that trade when, hey – I'll raise my hand. I was like, that is a brilliant trade by David Poile. You just got yourself a legit second-line center. You didn't have to sell the farm for Matt Duchesne, and now it's been more than one bad year. It's been a bad year and a half. So, can he bounce back? If he can, that's hey, you know, this team is not going to get like the buzz it's been getting, I don't think, preseason. Even though, you know, it is the reigning Central Division champion. But if Kyle Turris can figure it out, and or they can find, you know, they've got to figure it out with him, then it is a, still a really good, deep lineup of forwards. I still think they have a good defense core. Dante Fabbro, a lot more on his plate now.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
But, I, you know, you get the goaltending, and you're there.
I think it's interesting the kind of the switch in economic philosophy that they're going more money in the forwards because they know they've got to score more goals. And we don't know how long, you know, how much longer Pekka has in net. I think they'll be okay in the transition there. But I think that's the interesting part of this storyline is that they're shifting kind of, you know, allocating more money to the forwards.
Right. Although, you know, there's also more money to the defense once Roman Josi's extension is signed. But you're right. True. I mean, you couldn't – you look at Subban's deal. I mean, you just – if you're keeping that $9 million – and Subban, I thought a lot of him as a player. I also thought a lot of him in terms of what he meant to the locker room. I think he was always – I mean, he just had a different kind of, I think, swagger and even competitiveness than some guys on the team. And in the playoffs, he was kind of the guy out front, right? He kind of set the tone. And I do think they're going to miss that, and they need to find that elsewhere. There is a void there beyond just that he was a good player, but I think you had to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't find yourself a legit second scoring line, I just don't see how you're making another run like they made in 2017. I think that's obviously, David, what the conclusion he came to on this.
Doesn't that seem to start and end, though, with Duchesne? And maybe he makes Granlund the guy that Granlund's supposed to be.
Yeah, and maybe he makes Turris better. Those three are together, and Turris moves to the wing, and it's Jofa 2 or whatever you want to call it. You know, but I don't know. I think Duchesne has got to be a big part of it. And obviously, he was fantastic. You know, in this last playoff for Columbus. But you know, then you've got a lot of interesting stories and individual. You know, Craig Smith is an interesting storyline here, as you know, he's got to, where is he going to move down? Are they going to, or is Turris going to be a third line center? You know, they do have a lot of options, and of course, you mentioned Rocco. I mean, hey, that was the pleasant surprise last year.
Then there's Bonino sitting there with 17 goals. Like, what do you do with him? Now that might be a guy that you could move based on production and contract, but I don't know if you want to.
Right? Yeah, exactly. To me, like if you don't have to, as you sit here and you're extending Josi, I mean, I'd rather have him than not. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Like, if you felt like you had to move one of those two, right, he would be more movable.
What does this team still need, in your opinion? To me, if you see a lot of these championship-caliber teams, there's a big, ugly guy that goes and smashes into people and throws himself in front of the goal and is that guy that goes places that other people don't want to go and does things that other guys don't want to do. To me, they still need that guy. And I'll say this for PK. It's not like he was fighting with somebody every night, but he played heavy and he leaned on people and he agitated people and he did all those things. I know there, and I got hockey purist friends. I didn't grow up with it, but I got people who did. They're like, well, he was careless with the puck and he'd be sloppy with the puck. I said, I got that. But he'll also go and just slam somebody into the boards and he'll take some hits. You know, he'll do those things. That's all gone.
Your hockey friends sound like Thurston Howell III.
Well, let me tell you something.
PK is reckless with the puck loving.
Now that's Thurston Howell.
Jim Backus.
Yeah, there you go. It's a great point. And both of them, because, yeah, again, like Subban's the guy who's going to get in, you know, in Sidney Crosby's face and tell him to shut up, you know?
After he bounces his head off.
I mean, like, and Roman Josi's a great player. You extend him.
Right.
He's a captain. But like that's not him.
Nope.
It's not. It's never going to be him. It's, you know, it's just like we talk about with Mariota. Their, you know, personalities are what they are, and I do think they'll miss that. But I mean, look, what did they do at the trading deadline? They went and they got Brian Boyle before it. They got Wayne Simmons. Obviously, they were desperately scrambling for that guy you just mentioned.
Simmer had been that guy.
Had been that guy.
He had been one of those heavy agitator, get into people, physical guys. I just don't know how much he had left.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he was falling. Exactly. He was falling off the cliff last year.
Yeah.
And they got him, and it was like, oh, okay, yep.
And Boyle was willing to do some of that. He's a big body, and you know, he'd go down in front of the net.
I really thought he'd be back. I thought they'd try, and I don't know what all went on there, but, I, you know, I thought, like, he was an asset. So I agree. I think at some point this year probably you're going to see that guy come in from somewhere else because I don't see him. And they do need that. Like Austin Watson is a guy who will do some of that.
Yeah.
But they need at least one more. And not just getting to the hard areas, but someone who kind of, you know, intimidates the other team and, like, you know, stay off Victor Arvidsson. Someone's got to keep people off Victor Arvidsson.
Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, at Joe Rexroad. So what are you looking at tomorrow in this preseason game with the Patriots and Titans?
Well, I hope, you know, all these games, I just hope we get to see the regulars for a decent amount of time.
Yeah.
You can kind of count on that in game three. So when they play the Steelers on that Sunday night, I think we're going to see a lot of it. I hope there's more than the opener. And I hope we get to see a decent segment from Mariota.
It was two series, 12 total plays last year in game two.
Game two, yep.
That doesn't give me a lot of optimism.
You know who caught it? If threw a 47-yard touchdown, you know who? Taywan Taylor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, and then we talked to Jayon Brown and talked about, you know, going against Tom Brady on Saturday night in Nissan Stadium, and he was like, he's not playing, is he? But then one of the New England media members told Monday 180 he anticipated Tom playing at least a little bit, so who knows?
I mean, thing is, like, normally I think, like, the Titans would be, man, you have a chance to, but, I mean, they just blew this team out in a real game, like, a few months ago. I know it was worth, like, a participation trophy from Brady to Vrabel.
Yeah, he literally had made and gave to Vrabel,
But still, like, there's no mystique, right? Because that just happened. And then, of course, they watch him go win a Super Bowl.
Joe, we got to have you back again soon, man.
Yeah, man.
Our people will get with your people.
Hey.
Now you know where we are. It's funny. You're like, hey, I have no idea where your station even is. I'm like, come on, man. Everybody, no, zero idea. Do you have parking?
Not allowed.
We do have parking.
Was not allowed to Google you. Hey, next time, we're talking hair metal, man.
Okay.
I thought we'd maybe talk a little hair metal because, I mean, we've talked off the air.
Yes.
You know, I'd love to, like, do a segment on hair metal.
Okay. All right. You want to throw us out like a band? Maybe.
Well, I've told you that I had a Dokken poster. I'm not ashamed.
Okay.
I had a Dokken poster in my room, high school.
You were rocking with Dokken.
I also had a Samantha Fox poster.
Samantha Fox.
Okay.
It was quite a teenager's 1980s
room. Was your
room.
Dokken poster tooth and nail, or was it under lock and key?
It was back for the attack.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is kind of lame.
I must be older than you.
A little bit.
Okay.
I don't want to, we're all in the same range, but a little bit, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And you're right. Those albums are better, but that was the new album when I bought it. There we go.
We'll sing Joe Rexroad out with Dokken. Mark Mariani is probably somewhere on a scooter on his way. We'll have Moonshine in studio for a couple hours coming up next. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
More 3HL talking football with the former Titans All-Pro, Mark Mariani, coming up.
Hey, it's Chris Jericho.